Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom on the programme tonight. Indians planning to study in Canada and those pursuing courses there stand to be worst affected as the Justin Trudeau administration brings in new norms for overseas students in its bid to tackle rising food costs and a housing crisis. India is the largest source country for overseas students in Canada. 2.3 lakh Indian students are enrolled in various courses in the country. That's a huge number. The Canada government's move to cap the number of overseas students and a rise in the cost of living may now make Indian students weigh Canada against other options such as the UK, US and Australia. Next up on the show, the Maldives government confirms that it has allowed a so-called Chinese research vessel to dock in Malaya at a time when New Delhi and Malaya are in the midst of a tense period with the pro-China government in the Maldives seemingly preferring Beijing to New Delhi. What are the implications of this? I'll be joined by the former Navy Chief Arun Prakash. And finally, at a time when there are so many deaths by suicide, new norms from the government that make it clear for coaching centres deal with the well-being of students or face the consequences. But are the measures strong enough and is enough being done to reduce the pressure upon students looking at entrance exams? But first, the situation for students in Canada, with Canada capping the intake of international students, something that directly impacts Indians. It's a temporary two-year cap on international students is what they say. 3.6 lakh students will be allowed in 2024, which means that they have slashed international student intake by a whopping 35%. The cap comes after the cost of living requirement was doubled in December. Students will have to submit additional documents. Students will need a provincial attestation letter, which makes it difficult. Provinces will decide which university gets how many students or which college gets how many students. The cap will be reassessed eventually next year, but this is thought to be a fallout of the housing crisis in Canada. But it also comes at a time when there is a great deal of tension between India and Canada on the issue of Sikh extremism in Canada. Now, are Canadians, Indian students already avoiding Canada? Well, there is already an 86% fall in Canadian student permits to Indian students. That number has fallen dramatically from 1,08,940 to 14,910 in 2023. It is seen to be a fallout of the Indo-Canada diplomatic row, with fewer Indian students having applied for a permit. So the ramifications of this are all huge, not least of all to Indian students, certainly to Canadian universities who earn hugely from the presence of Indian students. Aditya Bhatti, a licensed immigration advisor, joins us. Pranjal Kohli, an aspiring student, and Terry Milewski, a retired senior correspondent at CBC. Thank you all very much for being with us. Aditya Bhatti, we'll talk about students in a moment, but is this perhaps directly linked in a sense to what happens to students of Indian origin who go to Canada and then try and become Canadian citizens or get a work permit? Ultimately, is the effort of the Canadian government aimed at cutting that down, those numbers down?
Hi, Vishnu. First thing we need to understand is that the decision is not specifically for India market.
Yeah, sure.
It is an overall cut down on the international segment. So not specifically targeting India or Indian students per se. That wouldn't be fair to say. Other end of the spectrum, there is this fact that close to about 20 to 30% of students who have gone on a visa, and again, I'm talking in international students, not specific Indians, are not actually enrolled in classes where they should be and are apparently doing something else. So that is a cause of concern. And obviously, every country wants to attract bona fide, genuine students only, and they are trying to plug that gap.
All right. Terry Milewski, how would you look at this? This huge cut. Canada accounts for hundreds of thousands of students already studying over there. This is a source of incredible income to Canadian universities. All of this comes at a time when relations between Ottawa and New Delhi are pretty poor. Do you see some sort of a link already? The numbers, for example, yes, of Indian students applying has gone down very sharply.
Yes, it has gone down very sharply, and certainly there is a link between The deterioration in diplomatic relations between India and Canada is certainly having an effect already, but probably it's had more effect than the minister has attempted to introduce yesterday. because, I mean, of the expulsion of 40 Canadian diplomats, the people who actually do the paperwork to process visa applications, had a terrible effect on the number of Indian students applying to come to Canada. So in a sense, this was a problem that was self-limiting. It was already limited. The numbers were down more than 80% in the third quarter of last year over the previous year in terms of Indian students, not just general international students, but specifically from India because of the diplomatic fracas between India and Canada. Now, having said all of that, it's still true that Canada's immigration system has been out of control. And if you think that's exaggeration, I'm quoting the Minister of Immigration, who said the system has become out of control. We had for the first time last year, 1 million new Canadians, not just students, but all newcomers, 1 million new citizens in Canada. The population is booming. We're over 40 million for the first time ever. It may not seem like much by Indian standards, but it certainly is having an enormous effect on the housing market, in particular in Canada. And there's some politicking going on, obviously. The government of the day is down in the polls, facing a defeat in an election next year, and wants to be seen to be doing something about a problem that affects all Canadians, newcomers or not. Mm-hmm. And that is the price of housing. It's up by $22,000. The average house now in Canada is approaching $750,000 in Canadian dollars. It's a lot of money. Something has to be done. The government wants to be seen to be doing something. But whether this is, it's a hard thing to stop. People are wanting to come to Canada. There's an enormous amount of pressure up because of the good reputation that Canada has had in education. It's an enormous business. Anytime you get a business that's contributing roughly $20 billion, international students contribute something like $20 billion in Canadian dollars a year to the Canadian economy. You try to cut that back, there's going to be pushback from the colleges and institutions that have an interest, that have been jacking up their fees and cashing in on the demand and sometimes not providing particularly good education. Minister says he's trying to have an impact on that too. But I'm a skeptic on whether this is really going to have the impact that is advertised, because the pressure is hard to resist.
Sure.
We had a target of 500,000 immigrants in Canada. What do we get? We got 1 million. What happened? The system's out of control. More people are coming than are legally supposed to.
Yeah.
And then they come as students. Many of them seek to stay. And what is the reason for all of this? What's behind it is Canada is a growing economy and it needs those new workers. 32,000 new tech workers last year, half of them from India. So employers want them. So we're not going to be able to stop this river of immigration. We might just be able to slow it down. That's
right.
Pranjal Kohli is an aspiring student. Pranjal, are you disappointed at the new steps being announced by Canada?
Yeah, of course. Eventually, I was planning to study in Canada. I started my process in early December, and I've been speaking to a lot of relatives, knowns in the country, and I got to know that there has been reforms which are going to be changed for the international students. And yeah, that was a little disheartening though, but after reading the articles, why this decision has been taken at large, I believe that's fine, because if there is not enough housing or the food prices are going up and everything, which is going to affect the budgets of the people like me and likewise for other people, I believe that's a fine and fair decision to be taken. Though, but yeah, it becomes a bit baffling for the people who are going to be going there for studies.
So, and therefore, yeah, Pranjal, are you going to be applying elsewhere now? I mean, avoiding Canada, going to the UK, Australia or somewhere else, or perhaps staying on in India?
I would rather stay in the country as of now. Yes, fiddling through options might be another thing I am going to do, which I am frankly doing. Looking at Canada as well, because I already have applied to a university there. Then I had to drop it because of the reforms. So maybe like in 2025, the reforms are going to be changed because I had a procedure planned in that particular country. But yeah, other English speaking countries, I don't see any reason not to, you know, explore them a bit. Of course, for now, we'll be staying in the country and yeah, just looking through options here.
Aditya Bhatti, isn't it a worry in Canada that, you know, the issue of illegal migration ends up being students who want a good education being denied?
See, basically, that's the whole idea, that there have been some, how should I say, players who have oversubscribed students and then not being able to give them seats once the student reached Canada. Those are the factors that have come to the notice of the government. And the announcements that have been recently made by the minister are basically targeting players like that. So personally, my opinion that students who are bona fide genuine, who are going to good quality providers, public colleges, will have nothing to worry about. And in fact, it is a dodgy ones, whether it is providers, whether it is agents, whether it is students who need to worry. But if you're a genuine student looking for good quality accommodation, looking for good education providers, you still have a good chance in Canada. That's not a problem. All you need to do is be aware that there are some cities where there is an accommodation issue, so you need to start your search a little earlier than what you would normally do. But then again, there are a lot of other cities where you could potentially go and get yourself a good education provider and not have the same level of accommodation issues.
Terry Milewski, the other way of course, looking at this is that there are so many Indians who get a Canadian degree, end up staying on in Canada legally, and end up making a phenomenal contribution to Canadian society. The Indo-Canadian community is huge and it is incredibly successful. And a critical part of the diaspora that is Canada. In a sense, you know, to cut down on the numbers of those who legally try and get into Canada after seeking and doing exceedingly well in a Canadian education system is sad for your country as well, isn't it?
Yes, it's a very good point. It's a very important point because it's fundamental. What Canada is doing is it's importing the people that it needs to support its growing economy. These people are getting a good education here. Then they're going on to pay taxes here. The record, in particular, of Indian students in Canada has been very good in terms of contributing to the economy. There is some resistance. People object and say, well, they come here as students, but that it's just a backdoor, people complain. There are Canadians who complain that Indian students are using the system as a backdoor. They're abusing the system as a backdoor to get permanent immigration to Canada rather than just to study and then go home. Well, why would Canada object to that exactly? It's very hard to figure out, considering that most of them, they're only too eager to get jobs after they graduate and then to start paying taxes and buying houses and contributing to the economy. And that is the fundamental driver, which I'm saying is an inexorable force, and that no matter how governments may tinker and carve out exceptions, these cutbacks don't apply, for example, if you're a postgraduate, if you're going for a doctorate, it doesn't apply to you. The really smart ones, in other words, oh, we still want you. We're not cutting back on you. We're only cutting back. This is the government's claim, I'm saying. Yeah. They're only cutting back on what the minister has called correctly, I believe, puppy mills, that is educational institutions with very low standards, where they're just cashing in and exploiting you. They don't tell you that, oh, by the way, this college is way up in the north of Ontario where it's freezing and you don't even have clothes to withstand the cold if you come from India. So there is a force here, a river of immigration, which I think is irresistible, and Canada's shooting itself in the foot, as you rightly point out in your question, by trying to limit that. We're the beneficiaries of that. Yeah. We benefit from the taxes paid by Indian students who stay here, get jobs, and their record, as I say, in doing so and contributing to the Canadian economy is extremely good. And the other countries are way behind. I mean, we've got roughly 40% of the international students from all over the world are Indian. Yeah. The second place is China with about 12%. India is far ahead of other countries in exploiting the advantages that Canada offers in terms of education, and they haven't shown any lack of interest in paying the exorbitant fees that these educational institutions charge to their students, but four times more on average than Canadian students pay.
Right.
So I think that for all of these reasons, we're not going to see the drastic cutback that the minister speaks about. One final point, and that is that we used to have, only 5 years ago, the numbers of Indian students in Canada were less than half what they are today. There's been a tremendous boom. So when the minister says, oh, we're going to limit it, we're cracking down, we're going to limit it to only 360,000, 5 years ago it was 120,000.
Yep.
So we're locking in a much higher level of immigration, and that is the hidden truth in this story today.
Well, it is sad. Canadian education systems have been outstanding. Take it from someone, me, with 2 degrees from Canadian universities. Well, it is, disappointing at so many levels for people looking to study over there, but Indian students perhaps will look at different countries as well, should those opportunities open up. We're going to move on now. Thank you very much, all of you, for being with us. We're going to move on to other aspects of our programming this evening. Well, the fact that the Maldives have actually confirmed that there is a Chinese spy ship headed to Malé is a very significant admission. It comes at a time, and this was a statement that they issued, it comes at a time when there's a great deal of tension between New Delhi and Malé. Now, what exactly are we talking about? We're talking about this Chinese spy ship. It's an oceanographic research vessel. Essentially, it maps the seabed, which would therefore enable the operation of Chinese submarines. It came through the straits over here, and it is headed to Malé. It's expected to dock in Malé on the 8th of next month. Now, why are we concerned about this area? Well, there's Hambantota, Karachi and Djibouti, three areas of Chinese influence in the Indian Ocean region. Let me explain to you what we are specifically talking about. Firstly, this is the ship in question. Indian Navy sources telling us that they are monitoring this Chinese ship, which is now in the Indian Ocean, 4,300 tons. But the point that I was trying to make was actually a little bit about the area. So let's take a look first at Djibouti. This is where China has its first overseas military base. This is a satellite image of the Chinese base in Djibouti. Again, an area where they're seeking to make their influence. There have been warships which have been deployed over here. Let's take a look now at another area, and this is Hambantota. Let's focus on Hambantota in Sri Lanka, where the Chinese have regularly deployed spy ships, as you can see in this image over here, an image from a little more than a year back of an advanced Chinese vessel which could actually monitor Indian missile tests. So that's in Hambantota. And again, let's just go back over here, take a look, and take a look over here at Karachi, which is, of course, a longtime partner of China's. And over here, you've got just a picture 1 month back of three Chinese warships which have actually been exercising with the Pakistan Navy. So now there is a Chinese research ship going to Malé at a time of tension between New Delhi and Malé. That's a cause of concern. Well, joining us now, Admiral Arun Prakash, the former Navy chief, one of the finest minds that the Indian Navy has produced. Thanks very much, sir, for being with us. The Maldivian statement, which has just come out, Admiral, is curious. They say that, you know, they are a friendly nation. There's nothing untoward in this. But in fact, it is rather deliberate. And the timing, I would suggest, sir, no coincidence. Would you agree?
Well, I don't know about the timing, because Maldives from the nearest Chinese port is about 7,000 or 8,000 kilometers. So this ship must have set sail quite a few days ago. So I don't know about the timing. But I think it's time for us to acknowledge and realize that China has very deep, profound interest in the Indian Ocean, in all the oceans, but especially in the Indian Ocean, because its economy, industry, it has strategic relevance here. Much of China's imports, exports, energy pass through the Indian Ocean. And therefore, China has to ensure that they are safe. The sea lanes of communication remain safe. So we must accept the fact that the Chinese Navy is going to fetch up here and in increasing strength in the days to come. What we see right now is the precursor. They are what we call shaping the environment. I mean, before anything happens at sea, you send out your research ships, your hydrographic ships, collect data, collect information, so that when your operational units are deployed, especially submarines, then they're adequately prepared. So I think we need to accept the fact that more and more Chinese, what you call spy ships, they're hydrographic ships, research ships, so on. We are going to see more and more of them.
Admiral, and, they have
many a... Many of our smaller neighbors do not have the choice of declining a Chinese request for a ship to put into their port.
Admiral, they have a presence already in Hambantota, in Djibouti, and in Karachi as well. So in a sense that they're already fairly well-placed in terms of where they can locate their military assets, their naval assets in the Indian Ocean, right?
Well, strictly speaking, they only have a presence in Djibouti, which is a base which they own. Hambantota, Karachi, any other port is a courtesy call. And, you know, by the laws of the sea, any ship can request to put into any port and ask for fuel, water, food, etc. And by and large, it is not declined. Now, I noticed Sri Lanka has declined, perhaps under pressure from India, but that's something that we can discuss.
Admiral, is there anything stopping the Chinese, given the pace of their naval construction over the last decade, from deploying a carrier battle group in the Indian Ocean?
At this moment, their carriers are relatively new. They are being worked up. But I presume that their major preoccupation at this point of time is Taiwan. And once the Taiwan issue is settled one way or the other, then they will be able to send in a permanent force into the Indian Ocean. And I suspect there will be an Indian Ocean squadron led by a carrier or maybe other destroyers or so on, which will be more or less permanent or semi-permanently present in the Indian Ocean. It makes sense because their sea lanes need protection. And the Chinese Navy, is one of their major tasks is to afford protection to their shipping and to their maritime Silk Road and CPEC and so on. So we will see the Chinese Navy in the years ahead, and we need to be prepared for that.
Admiral Prakash, you know, we are a peninsular nation. We've got island territories. But people in our country, in a sense, never think about the oceans. How is it time to start thinking, changing that altogether? Because the maritime threat isn't just Pakistan and Pakistan alone. It's evolving, not just China. What we are seeing off the coast of Yemen as well. This is a domain which is critical. It's critical for our economic growth and in terms of our presence in the Indian Ocean.
So when I said that the Indian Ocean is critical for China, it is equally, if not more critical for India, because we may be a peninsular nation, but given our strategic location, we are almost like an island, and almost 40% of India's GDP comes from foreign trade. So that's a significant figure. So we need to become alive to the fact that we are dependent on the oceans around us. Now, China realized this about 2.5 decades ago. They took a determination to become not just a maritime nation, but a great maritime power. And they've gone about it very methodically. They've created the world's largest navy numerically. The world's biggest shipping fleet belongs to China, 5,000 ships. The shipbuilding industry, the fishing fleet, the Coast Guard, all of them are the largest in the world. So they are truly a great maritime power. Now, we've unfortunately been neglectful, apart from the Indian Navy, which is, a competent and a fairly useful force. We've neglected all the other aspects of maritime power. And I think it's time we woke up and addressed every aspect of maritime power, whether it is shipbuilding, whether it is the merchant navy, whether it's a fishing fleet, undersea exploration, etc. And China has got 64 of these research ships, what you term spy ships. They are research ships. But as I said, they are preparing the ground for naval deployments, which lie in the very near future ahead.
All right, Admiral Prakash, thank you very much for speaking to us and sharing, your concerns and observations on this emerging trend or pattern that we see all around us in the Indian Ocean. Thank you very much. In a significant move, the Government of India, specifically the Ministry of Education, has announced several guidelines for coaching centres. This comes in response to several concerns about the welfare of students, student suicides, the unregulated growth of private coaching. mental health issues and several incidents which have been taking place in coaching centres. Many would suggest that these moves couldn't have come a day too late and that the interest of students really lies in ensuring their mental well-being, their physical health, and that education cannot be seen through the narrow prism of just scoring 100 in exams. Joining us now, Mrityunjay Narayanan, President of the Coaching Federation of India, Amita Wattal, Anand Kumar, the founder of Super 30, a coaching centre, but as you'll see, some of his thoughts extremely progressive when it comes to looking after students. We're also joined by Aarti Raj Ratnam, a clinical psychologist. Mr. Narayanan, do you welcome these steps?
Yeah, most of them, except one or two. The position government should have taken is, at least could have spoken to the, shared with the coaching fraternity and looked at from their perspective. Because I do feel it's really bad that so many students have committed suicide in some region like Kota, where there are a large number of students coming, almost 2 lakh students every year, studying in Kota and going through that process. There are a lot of other factors which are responsible for, you know, probably the mental health, this thing. Because education, because they come there to seek, do better in their competitive exams, and they get that. Apart from the academic pressure, there could be more reasons and more mental health workers or doctors and psychologists.
No, but Mr. Narayanan, most respectfully, isn't it a failure of the system if you have students committing suicide and not the students and the background that they have come from? Because the numbers in Kota are absolutely appalling in terms of the number of suicides. There must be something wrong at coaching centres.
No, I mean, as far as I know, because there are a lot of, there's not that much pressure given in the institute that, you know, students go for committing suicide.
Then why do they commit suicide, sir? It's because of the intense pressure, isn't it? It's because of our system being as difficult as it is for students.
Unless we try to figure out this, because this is a very serious thing and it has to be from the both the government
side. Sir, there have been 23 students who killed themselves, ended their lives in 2023, 17 in 2022. In December 2022, there were 3 deaths in a single day, student deaths by suicide in Kota. In 2021, 9 deaths. Suicides are up by 60% in Kota, and we still don't have an answer. Isn't it staring at us on our faces, sir?
So, I mean, the suicides happen even in IITs and AIIMS and all
yes,
the
it's all terrible, sir. Why don't we just condemn the fact?
It is a mental health issue of the current situation. No, the things have become really, there are n number of factors which we need to figure out, because it cannot be...
All right. Number of factors. Amita Wattal, is that response acceptable to you, that we have an n number of factors and hence suicides are taking place among students?
What I would like to say is that I'm a little disturbed by this conversation that I've just heard. I mean, are we comparing the number of suicides each year and saying not so much and so little? All I do want to say very categorically is that this should have come in sooner than later. Because the kind of coaching that is going on, it's not only about NEET to JEE, it's even about CUET. And we have huge amounts of children who are moving out of schools after grade 10 in order to join dummy schools who are allowing them in and allowing them to join coaching centers to crack the CUET. So the point is, in fact, I feel that even 16 is should have been 14, if you ask me, if at all. Because the way we're looking at it, a child has already moved into grades 11 and 12 by the age of 16. You pass out at 17. So the question, because when we talk about the national education policy, we're talking about something which goes far beyond the textbooks. We're talking about mental health. We're talking about understanding. We're talking about a sort of a overview of the way a child looks at learning. And learning is no more rote. It is more involved with the inner child. And a school is required for developing these kind of concepts. And if you have children just walking away, and a lot of parents are supporting this, which really worries me, because a child of 13 and 14 cannot make 16 cannot really make up his mind for himself. He comes under peer pressure. So this is very important that a child leaves school when he leaves school in grade 12 and not gets into coaching. Because the simple thing is that 11th and 12th are very important years for the development of a child's mind towards the environment, towards life, towards the way he looks at learning. And if coaching center is going to be the foundation of these years, then God help the youth of today. And what kind of people are they going to be? Because the world today expects a very different kind of ability. The competency that the world expects today, the market expects today, is a very different ability. And competition is about competing with oneself, not about competing with the other. The problem is the moment you're competing with someone else, you will fall short at some point or the other. And that's when all the suicides and all the other angst and the conflict takes place. So I think this kind of a thing with particularly the kind of stuff that we have, that there's going to be some kind of blocks in the way fees are being taken, on the way that registration is being done, the kind of infrastructure that has to be maintained in a coaching institution, the kind of assessment results that they give out to make it so public so the other child feels done in if their faces are not on those billboards, that you have thousands of faces who stood first and the child feels so low in self-esteem.
No, it's shocking.
Is very...
But one moment, ma'am, I just wanted to go across to Anand Kumar, the founder of Super 30. Anandji, thank you so much for being with us. Doesn't a lot of the problem arise at the level of parents? Because as Amitaji was saying quite correctly, a child of 14, 15, 16, 17 is a teenager, not necessarily in a position to know what is best for themselves. They are then confronted with the exam of their lives and they are told that, son, if you don't pass this, if you don't qualify, then you have failed us. When you, as the founder of Super 30, came across children with this kind of background and this kind of pressure, what did you do?
दरअसल में होता क्या है कि parents बगल में आसपास का देखा देखी में सामाजिक दबावों में social pressure में बच्चों को pressure करते कि बेटा तुमको भी हमारे अधूरे सपने पूरे करने, आपने ठीक कहा। तब क्या होता है कि parents बच्चों को करें इंजीनियर बन जा, डॉक्टर बन जा, कोटा चला था। बच्चा इस स्टेज में नहीं होता है कि वो डिसीजन ले पाए, पेरेंट्स के प्रेशर में आता है। और पेरेंट्स क्या है, अगर लोअर मिडिल क्लास है तो अपनी आखिरी जमीन भी बेच देते हैं। कोटा में ऐसा सिस्टम नहीं है कि बच्चों को ये टेस्ट किया जाए कि कैपेबिलिटी कितनी है, इसमें पैसा दिया एडमिशन हो गया। फिर उसके बाद क्या होता है कि बच्चा को जो बच्चे रिजल्ट ओरिएंटेड है, जो रिजल्ट दे सकते हैं, उनका एक अलग बैच बना दिया गया। वो बच्चा जो इंटरेस्टेड नहीं था मैथमेटिक्स में, फिजिक्स में, केमिस्ट्री में, उसको जबरदस्ती वहां भेजा गया, वो सबसे नीचे वाले बैच पे आ जाता है। वो प्रेशर फील करता है, डरा धमका हुआ फील करता है, वापस भी नहीं जा सकता है क्योंकि फी भी वापस नहीं होगा। माता पिता को भी कुछ नहीं अपने दर्द को बता सकता है। टीचर्स और स्टूडेंट का रेशियो इतना अधिक है कि टीचर से वो प्रेम, वो सहानुभूति नहीं मिलती कि इंटरेक्ट करे, तो अंत में सुसाइड कर लेता है। लेकिन जो गाइडलाइन निकला है बहुत बढ़िया निकला है कि कोई बच्चा का आप बिना इंटरेस्ट टेस्ट के एडमिशन नहीं ले सकते हैं, ये बहुत अच्छी बात है। दूसरी अच्छी बात है कि कोई बच्चा अगर पढ़ रहा है तो बैच को आप अलग अलग नहीं बना सकते हैं, सबको समान रखिए, सबको मिक्स करके रखिए, ताकि कमजोर बच्चा थोड़ा हो, थोड़ा टैलेंटेड हो, सबको एक साथ फलने फूलने का मौका, ये भी गाइडलाइन में अच्छा किया गया। उससे भी अच्छी बात कही गई है कि अगर बच्चा प्रेशर में आ रहा है और उसको पढ़ने की इच्छा नहीं है तो उसको पैसा वापस किया जाए।
Right.
तो तमाम बातें बहुत अच्छी की गई है जिससे प्रेशर घटेगा। लेकिन अंत में दो बात बोलना चाहेंगे। पहली बात कि ये कितना इसका इम्प्लीमेंटेशन होता है, कितना ये धरातल पर ये कानून आता है, ये देखने वाली बात होगी। अब बावजूद इसके माता पिता कितना समझते हैं, पेरेंट्स कितना समझते हैं, ये जरूरी।
आरती राजरत्नम, सिंपल टर्म्स, द मैड कॉम्पिटिशन विच एग्जिस्ट्स, विच जेनरेशन ऑफ इंडियंस हैव बीन ब्रॉट अप विथ, हाउ इज दैट horrible for the mental health of the individual?
I'd like to start with one thing. We can't measure mental health only by the number of suicides. There are so many acute and chronic conditions which are, you know, under the radar. Children who go in for chronic anxiety, who are unable to kick it, who push themselves. See, the teenage brain is very vulnerable. So you can push them into long-term personality disorders. You can have a lot of, dissociation that happens. So in terms of the mental health of any child, this system, these rules are too little and I feel still too late. So let me get there. Secondly, when we talk about mental health, this is the gang age, the teen years, they need to have their peer group. They need to have a lot of time to, you know, socialize, to get to know people, to identify, to develop their own identity. The coaching culture does not even give them enough time to sleep. Now, if you notice, there are children who are, I mean, ma'am mentioned that, you know, there are people who come out of grade 10 and go into coaching centers completely. But there are also this whole group of children where the parents don't want them to miss out the school experience. So they're also going to school. And then at the off-school time, they're going for the coaching center experience. And I think that's even more dangerous because something else is being taught in the coaching center, something else in school. And we're not even, you know, cognizant of the fact that these children are under tremendous pressure. And then, you know, parents somehow keep comparing them with other children, with other things. So if, you know, if I even score a little less in a particular test, I'm pushed into another class instead of understanding that sometimes slowing down is very important. And there's a beautiful Zen story that talks about a person who was scared of his own footsteps and the sound of his footsteps, that he started running really fast, hoping to, you know, outrun it. And ultimately what happened was his shadow caught up. He couldn't do anything and he collapsed. Really what happens in that situation is you need to sit in the shade of a tree, slow down because the footsteps will stop and your shadow will disappear. In similar terms, when I talk about mental health, we need to understand that children need a lot of downtime because the vulnerable teenage brain resets itself first through sleep, secondly through social interaction, and thirdly, only when these two are there, they can go into reflection, which will help them understand how they can prepare better for the next exam or the next test, and we're not allowing for that. And I feel, yes, we need to really take these, at least whatever is there now from the new directives that have come through, I think it has to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
And also, more importantly, we need to make counseling available to children who are competing at this level.
You know, Mr. Narayanan, Aarti makes a very important point that let's not measure mental health issues on the basis of the number of suicides, because there are so many children who are impacted in ways which cannot be measured, in many cases may not even be detected. In a system which does result in suicides, the number of people who may be impacted differently would be any number, much, much larger, much more significant. Is it not time for us to accept that the system that you are encouraging is one which can seriously damage an individual?
Yeah, I mean, as far as residential institutions like that are located in Kota or even Hyderabad, there are Aurangabad, there are a lot of places like that in India. It's all because of the failure of the existing education system in supporting the competitive examinations which have been kept by the government only. The very same examination and the National Testing Agency is doing that examination. For example, let us look at students are being admitted to IIT. Okay, Madhya Pradesh and all other engineering colleges. JEE they have announced, JEE mains. Then they have announced also JEE advanced. JEE mains, there are about 2.5 lakh students are selected for taking JEE advanced. Out of that, about 50,000 odd seats are covered that covers IITs, NITs and IIITs altogether. These three major chunk of institutions cater to about 50,000 enrollments. For that, we could have stopped at JEE main. Why push children to JEE advanced, which is again, you know, from the very same 2.5 lakh students only you are getting it. And the top 16,000...
No, so I take that point that you are mentioning that there is a system which feeds a certain need for coaching centers. You know, Amita Vattal, it is true.
There is no need of JEE advanced. Actually, if you ask me, there is no need of JEE advanced for students to make it to IIT. The ranks, to top 16,000 students out of that only going to IITs. The next level for NITs, the next level for IIITs. That's it. Period. I mean, why put pressure on our own
system? All right, so we'll ask you to just fix that camera of yours for a moment because it's been shaking a lot. Let me just go back to Amita Vattal. Ma'am, I think it is important that in as much as we speak about mental health issues and the well-being of students, this is a system which has existed for time immemorial. You know, we've all grown up and had the option of doing this. It's only now that we have the liberty to actually talk about mental health issues. It's a system which of education which is fundamentally messed up, if I can use those words. And therefore, that perhaps is the root cause of a lot of what we see now. Would you agree?
No, you're absolutely right in what you're saying, because I think this is a legacy that our children have inherited from us. And I think, unfortunately, as a result of which their resilience is not there. They're not able to cope at that level. And the kind of pressures that they find is very, very problematic. But I'd like to say to you that the world's highest performing education systems are all now focused on education for human flourishing. And that is the word. For education to work in life and livelihoods, tomorrow's young people need to innovate, be responsible and sensitive. That is something that a coaching center can't really get into, because there's a whole other world out there in learning other than 2 + 2 = 4 or some kind of mathematical formulas. Because I feel that we need to challenge today. If you want to fix this mess that we're in, the NCF is trying. We also need to challenge the prevailing standardized education policies and practices which are in place in favor of more individualized concepts, in favor of the fact that we have to approach not only the skill sets and the mindsets, but the heart sets.
Yes.
And how do we do that? I think that is so very important. And if we don't do this, then I'm sorry, we will potentially lose the franchise for preparing the next generation. If we're going to make these excuses of JEE needs this much percentage, NET needs this much percentage, CUT, for God's sake, I mean, we have to get out of that. And we have to really, the parents must look at this. I appeal that if our children have to really be out there in the world of tomorrow, it's a very different world. It's not a world that you are preparing for them through these coaching centers.
I understand what you're saying. And Anand Kumarji, would you accept that when we talk about education, perhaps the heart of education needs to be humanity, sensitivity, of teaching a child to be a good human being, not teaching a child or forcing a child to get 101 out of 100. Isn't that how we as a nation have completely failed? What are we trying to do? Are we trying to raise good human beings, or are we trying to raise good robots?
बहुत अच्छा भी मैडम ने कहा कि एक ओवरऑल डेवलपमेंट होना बहुत जरूरी है. आजकल बच्चों को हम स्पीड एंड एक्यूरेसी का केवल प्रैक्टिस कराते हैं, और उस बच्चा को अगर अच्छा नंबर में लाड ले आता है, इम्तिहान में अच्छा करता, अच्छे मार्क्स लाता, उसके बाद भी उसको दुनियादारी का कुछ समझ नहीं होती है, वो जीवन में कुछ नहीं करता, केवल फिजिक्स केमिस्ट्री मैथ का रट्टा मार मार के प्रैक्टिस करके IIT पे तो चला गया, लेकिन वो नहीं जानता है कि नॉर्थ अमेरिका किसको करते हो, हिस्ट्री का वर्ल्ड वार के बारे में कुछ नहीं समझ रहा है, उसके आम जीवन में उसकी कुछ समझ नहीं है, तो वो बहुत आगे अच्छा नहीं कर पाता है, एक रोबोट बन जाता है. ये बात से हम 100% सहमत है. इसलिए बच्चों को हम ये कहना चाहेंगे कि मार्स के अंधाधुंध जो रेस है उसमें आप मत परेशान हो. और कभी कभी बच्चा का खराब नंबर आ जाता है, वो सुसाइड कर लेता है. उन बच्चों को कहना चाहते हैं, पेरेंट्स को बोलना चाहते हैं कि दुनिया के किसी एक इम्तहान में इतनी ताकत नहीं है कि वो आपकी टैलेंट की गवाही दे सके. इसलिए परीक्षा में नंबर लाने के बजाय सब्जेक्ट को समझना चाहिए, उसका अंडरस्टैंडिंग बढ़ाइए, हाउ एंड व्हाई जानिए, उसके गहराई में जानिए, ओवरऑल डेवलपमेंट करिए. बच्चा आजकल स्कूल छोड़ के भाग जाता है, कोचिंग सेंटर चला जाता है, डमी स्कूल में ग्रुप मिलता है, हेल्दी ग्रुप मिलता है, आपस में डिस्कशन होता है, तो काफी जरूरी है. इससे हम सहमत है कि स्कूल की पढ़ाई, ओवरऑल डेवलपमेंट वही जरूरी है. और आज हमारे बच्चे इसलिए सुपर 30 के सफल होते कि उनको जीवन की बारीकियों के बारे में हम लोग सिखाते हैं, ना कि केवल रट्टा मार मार के पढ़ाई करवाए.
आरती, कैन आई जस्ट आस्क यू, एंड नो टू चिल्ड्रन आर आइडेंटिकल, व्हाट शुड पेरेंट्स लुक आउट फॉर व्हेन यू नो दे डील विद अ चाइल्ड हु मे बी अंडर अ ग्रेट डील ऑफ प्रेशर, बिकॉज समटाइम्स यू मे नॉट इवन नो, अ चाइल्ड मे अपीयर टू बी नॉर्मल, but it's part of a system which we are talking about over here. What do parents, or what should parents look out for?
See, one is the obvious signs where, you know, you see a sudden change in behavior. So there are issues with sleep habits. The child is no longer socializing, is unable to interact with people, is also verbalizing that they're finding it overwhelming. That's the obvious signs. But the subtle ones are the high functioning anxiety where the child is going to strive towards perfection, is going to, you know, sort of overthink and overplan, micromanage, become very, very reclusive in that sense. These are the second set of symptoms that I would ask parents to look for, because what they're really doing is trying to overreach and try and push themselves towards something that they're not really comfortable doing. The third set of symptoms are the ones where you will see the dissociation-related issues where, you know, there is a disconnect from reality. They are no longer able to, you know, what we call the no connection with the reality that they're living in, that kind of thing. So I would ask parents to first set a connection ritual to understand, even before your children enter, you know, the competitive exam years, as I would like to put it, set a connection ritual, build a ritual where you speak with your child, listen to your child on an everyday basis. Don't be just a crisis intervention parent where when everything goes out of hand, you suddenly rush to a mental health professional. What can be done by you is what's called co-regulation. When your children speak to you or let you know that something is overwhelming, listen, because they're not being lazy or they're not trying to avoid a task. The system is skewed against their natural development. When something is skewed against your natural development, there will be an element of stress. And when that stress is something that they're able to sort of manage with your support, which is the co-regulation that I'm requesting you to do, they will be able to manage the competitive exams, though the system is not the best. When you don't pick those signs, when you're not that supportive parent, when you dismiss their feelings, minimize their feelings, advise, become the moralizing, lecturing kind of person, they realize that there's no point reaching out for help, and that's when it becomes very dangerous. So if you can be a supportive, co-regulating, responsive parent, this would be a stage where children can really look back and say, okay, it was difficult, but I had this loving, supportive adult who could help me through it. And we don't really need to reach out to mental health professionals if that support structure is available at home.
Sure.
Since that's not really available, that's why we're, you know, trying to reach out to professionals who are, you know, who need to be reached early. You can't reach in the last minute and say, you know, try and fix my child one day before the exam, 2 days before the exam, because that's not
possible.
No,
that's just not right.
So I hope I'm making my... Making
no,
sense.
You are. And I just wanted to go back to Mr. Narayanan one last time. Sir, the steps which have been taken are important steps now by the government. Some would suggest that a lot more needs to be done. The aspect of mental health of students, do you believe that now with counselors and others who deal or address these concerns, we'd be able to look after the mental and the emotional well-being of students more? Will coaching centers, you represent the Federation, will they take this seriously?
Yes, why not? Why not? I mean, though it is a very centric to coaching hubs like Kota and few towns only, otherwise predominantly coaching centers work on a more like, you know, the school, they attend the school, regular schools, and, you know, come up for the evening 2 hours or so and 2 or 3 days a week. So it's the same thing. What is applicable for places like Kota is not applicable for the entire country. I mean, that's what I wanted to communicate for sure. So, and setting up conditions like, you know, below 16, they should not be allowed for coaching. And particularly school students, children, you know, they get challenged even for they want to appear for MTSE. Many a time the schools are not able to support in providing services to help them or help them cope up with such exams. Olympiad, Junior Science Olympiad, Mathematical Contest, all these things, you know, they want some help, you know, because they're not familiar with it. They want to do that, and coaching institutes are helping them out in overcoming that.
Sir, helping out the student is natural. I mean, nobody is questioning that. I think it's coaching institutes which put so much pressure on children that their well-being is clearly and statistically impacted, sir. Nobody is saying that coaching institutes don't have a role or that students cannot go to tutors, right? But you're part of a system, sir, which is the problem. Do you accept that?
We don't put pressure at all. I mean, there is something which is, it is all chosen by the student or the parent.
So and that yes, sir. The student and the parent select something. You are part of the process which accepts what parents are saying, and you allow the child to have pressure build up and feel deeply unsatisfied at a basic level of emotional well-being. Are you not a part of the problem?
The very existence puts pressure, repeated.
So it's very, very, very straight. It's not such a simple statement. This requires,
No, it's not. And I think I accept the point when you mentioned,
sir. I'll give you a very good example.
Mr. Narayanan, I'm running out of time, so I'm just wrapping this up. I don't mean to interrupt you, but I do accept the point. When you say that this is part of a larger issue, it's a system of education and a system of exams. That lies at the core of the issue.
Yes.
But certainly coaching centers have to be responsible. And perhaps these rules are required now because coaching centers haven't been responsible. But for parents listening to this program across the country, it's perhaps time to look out for the emotional requirements and the happiness of your children and perhaps base their development and your role as a parent on trying to raise good human beings. Is there anything more important than that? I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us.
Thank you.
We'll take a short break at this stage.